Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason O'Fear, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. For some reason, the intro is not playing, so we'll go get straight into it. Sherry, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good. How are you, Jason? I'm tired, but no, everything's all good. I'm still very blessed. What about you? How's your week?
It's pretty good. I worked yesterday, and not much going on. It's just the days are just kind of dragging on, and I haven't really spent a lot of time looking into the paranormal as of late. Have you heard anything interesting going out there in the world of the paranormal?
Well, there's a lot of things going out. Where do I start? Oh, my gosh. I'm right now I am drawing into a blank. Just a lot of things are happening. I found a good article. You know, this is a really, and we're going to have to talk about this when we get a good guest. We're going to talk about soul exchanges, where they're called Who and What Are Walk-ins. And it's interesting how a soul may be coming into this life, and then it happens where they experience a traumatic event, and then another soul walks in. The other soul that was inhabiting the body, per se, it dies off, and another soul walks in. It's not a possession. There's a difference. Walks into the body, and then plays out the rest of its life. And so one of the typical, the typical signs is when a person is a little bit different, you know, maybe when they experience a near-death experience or something very traumatic, but it's not an overall change, but it's very subtle changes, you know, and it was a very, very interesting article I wanted to bring out. So that was kind of interesting, kind of way out there, but, you know, I just wanted to share that with the audience.
And I've heard that before, this where another soul walks in. Now, you know me, I always have to play the skeptic, so, you know, I always kind of look towards psychology when I hear people changing, who knows? I don't know everything that goes on in the universe, so maybe that's a real thing where one soul gets tired and another one can just pop in. Who knows?
Exactly. That's what I seem to think too. So, you know, it's a very good possibility, and you know, we have to be open to those kind of things, and that's why we have Paranormal Horizons. We like to cover different facets of the paranormal and the supernatural and the metaphysical and the spiritual. We're going to bring on Manny Pureheart, wonderful soul. I met him at a show. He just really touched my heart. Very, very old soul, very enlightened being. He is actually a mystic and a psychic, and he's very well known. He travels to different shows, and, you know, I remember him way back. I could probably say him and I are pretty I don't know if we're really close to age, but, you know, I can see way back when I started in the metaphysics about 20 years ago, I remember the name. So it's very familiar, and I was very privileged to finally meet him in person. Very wonderful, and I'm glad to have him for the first time in our show.
Yeah, and it looks like he's called in, so we'll bring him on right now.
Hi. Yay.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm right here.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good. I need to correct Sherry. It's Monty, not Manny. But other than that, and as soon as
Monty.
as soon as I finish blushing from all the compliments, you know, I'm like everybody. I'm just a human being doing the best I can to be a spiritual being.
Well, you certainly are pretty much in your journey, and I really appreciate you spending the time to help our listeners and what they can do to help them, and we can all learn from the experience that what you're going to share tonight.
Well, hopefully we all learn from one another.
That's
I do have
exactly.
some things to share about the walk-ins. If you're interested, I have some awareness and some knowledge of walk-ins that might augment what you started talking about, or we can go on with whatever you want to talk about.
Oh, well, why not? Let's jump right into it. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, let's talk.
Okay.
That's perfect.
Well, my experience is that a walk-in is usually triggered by a near-death experience. And what happens is we come into body with a soul contract, and one person's soul contract might call for them to expire, to die at a certain point. Because we are where we are at this turning point of the great cycles, a fully formed adult body is a very nice thing to have, rather than coming in as an infant and spending the first, 10 to 20 years being useless and helpless. When it comes time for the first person's soul to complete their contract and for the body to what would be called die, the second soul comes in by pre-agreement and takes over that adult, fully functioning body and carries on with its important work, whatever that work is. So it's a continuous flow for the physical body, but each soul comes in to fulfill their part of the contract. And then there's also something that's called, and this is what I experienced, I completely changed who and what I was at the age of 42. I woke up on my 42nd birthday enlightened with no idea what had happened. I truly thought I'd gone crazy. And if I did, it seems to work pretty well and nobody seems to get hurt. I'll stick with it. But there's walk-ins and then there's step-ups where you come in at one level.
Oh, I've never heard that. Please explain that.
Well, I'm just about to. When we come into body, for instance, my understanding of my own existence in this body is I had to spend 42 years learning some very important karmic lessons, and on the morning of my 42nd birthday, which just happens to be divisible by 7 for all you numerologists out there that put importance on sevens, I woke up enlightened. What I had done is I had completed my soul contract to experience certain karmic lessons, and I had grown through them to the point where I was then ready to step up to who and what I have always been, which was a much higher level being. So it was the same soul in the same body, but with the restrictions removed.
It sounds kind of complicated to me. I always find myself living in ignorance because I think ignorance is bliss, but there's a part of me that wants to develop spiritually, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's all very mysterious to me.
Well, that's unfortunate.
I know. There's a part of me that wants to develop and become a spiritual being, but there's another part of me that's kind of wary of it, or not, kind of skeptical of it. That's my problem, is I'm open, but there's a level of skepticalness with me because I don't know what to believe, because there's so much fakery and deception out there in the world of everything.
Exactly. This is where discernment comes in. I will tell you this, that at the level, whatever level it is that I exist at currently, I still find myself to be very, very skeptical of a lot of things, including some of the things that I do. And it's just, I think it's human nature to be skeptical. Now, when I awakened on my 42nd birthday, very shortly thereafter, Spirit came to me, and I wasn't used to having voices in my head. And the Spirit came to me and said, "We are going to block you from doing any reading or any deep discussion of anything of a spiritual nature for a period of 1 year while we teach you ourselves, because whenever somebody receives information from us, including me, they filter it through their own filters and then they transmit that as though that were truth. And to them it is, but to you it may not be." So I spent 1 year with Spirit as my only teacher, and I tested them. I tried to read, I had an old Bible laying around. I tried to read some of that. I normally read I read all the time. Very good comprehension, very high speed, and all that good stuff. I would read, I tried to read a paragraph, open it at random, try to read a paragraph, and I'd get to the end of the first line, and my eyes would bounce back to the first of that line, and I'd have to start all over again. And I could not for the life of me read a single paragraph. But Spirit was always there. Spirit was talking to me and teaching me, and I was very, very skeptical. Trust and believe. And the more you trust, the more you'll be given to trust. The more you believe, the more you'll be given to believe. And for me and for a lot of the people that I've taught over the years, I've found that listening too much to the skepticism can hold you back. You don't ever want to ignore it. This is where discernment comes in. And the healthy skepticism, I think, is a very good thing. But there comes a point where it's time to trust. And that
sounds like
Go ahead.
It sounds like it's like anything in life where there has to be a balance. You know, you have to find this median in
exactly.
there to.
The only difference is that when you're working with Spirit, you can't necessarily go to a book and read about it or talk to somebody that's already experienced it, or you don't have any fallbacks. And for me, I'd hear these voices in my head. They'd tell me to do certain things. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. The very first really powerful healing that I did, I was a single father of a 16-year-old boy, and he was out in the backyard and working in the wood pile in rural Oregon here. And he came in, and he had three giant water blisters on his arm. And I heard in my head that I was to hover my hand over his blisters but not touch them. And I could feel energy flow, and then I heard in my head, it is done. And I pulled my hand away, and there was no trace of the blisters. I can't ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to believe. That was the first major stepping stone for my belief. I've come to the point now in my life where I just absolutely trust Spirit. And whatever they want me to do, that's what I'll do. And the words that come out of my mouth are not words that I would have chosen to use, but over and over and over again, they're exactly what the recipient needed to hear.
Mandy, I want to share this with you that ever since I've been on my first and my experience with a colleague of mine who I was with him in an exorcism case, and ever since then my life has changed. It's weird. It's not weird, I would say, but I've learned to listen to the trees and to the natives that are in my land, and I just been taking notes. And who knows? I asked Spirit. I said, "Well, my ancestors, what do you want me to do?" And they said, "Continue what you need to do, because you never know. You might end up, who knows, read a book, write a book or whatever." But I love it. It's really, like you said, it's about letting go and allowing that information to come through.
Absolutely. That you hear every once in a while about the still small voice within. And
yes.
early in my development, in fact, before I became spiritually aware, I had a job where I was working nights, and I would get off at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then I'd have to do errands and so forth. And I'd try to lay down and go to sleep, and it could take me up to 8 hours to go to sleep. And my monkey mind was just jabbering, chattering. It just made me crazy. And from out of nowhere came this knowingness of how to meditate and how to shut up the monkey mind. And I worked with it for about 6-7 weeks, and I was able to completely divest myself of the monkey mind. And now, to this day, I can lay down, I can be asleep within 5 minutes easily. And
that's wonderful.
When I go into silence, it's truly silence. And when the monkey mind interfere, that still small voice can be easily heard. This is why meditation is so important. It's one of the things I really recommend very highly to people, is to find a good meditation practice and learn to shut up the monkey mind.
I know with me personally, my mind's always going 1,000 miles a minute. But on this discernment thing, how does somebody, like, how do you know it's not your imagination? Say I want to connect to spirit and I'm meditating and I'm getting to a place where I believe I can do that. How do you discern whether or not it's just not some portion of your consciousness or your imagination versus you actually communicating with a higher source? Is there any way to know that, or do you just kind of got to believe it and feel it in your heart sort of thing?
No, it is. You know, when you're working with spirit, and no matter what the question is, the answer is always it's simpler than that. And there's a very simple and easy way to do this. I just taught somebody over the phone the other night when I was doing a reading for them. They had the same question. And what you do is put yourself into a semi-meditative state in a quiet condition, in a quiet surrounding, and think your own name to yourself a half a dozen times, and you will feel either within your body or around your body a shift. Something may feel cold or cool or warm or pressure or lack of pressure or floating, but there will be something, and it's different for each person, which is why I'm not telling you specifically what it would be for you. But there is a sign in energetically that you are thinking. Then you ask spirit to call your name a half a dozen times, and there will be a completely different sensation. And it's always the same. It's your energy field's reaction to the energy of spirit. It's your energy field's reaction to you calling your own name, thinking on your own. And then the third possibility is that it may not be a high-level energy that you're communicating with. And what you can do there is you can ask spirit to emulate the energy of a low-energy entity calling your name, and there will be a completely different, yet again, a completely different sensation, usually an unpleasant one. So it's very, very easy.
So next question. We talked to a lot of people that have a lot of diverse experiences. Now, are there any risks to opening oneself up to communicating with spirits? Like, you're talking about a lower energy spirit. Are there any kind of risks where, I don't know, like possession or anything like that, where things could get dangerous when you try and open yourself up to things like that?
I understand that it can happen. I don't know. I only know of one person that had a attachment by a lower energy entity. But one of the things that my wife, who's actually quite wise, taught me when we first started seeing one another 30 years ago, was the story of how a pack of wolves serves a herd of caribou by taking down the old, the infirm, and the sick. And what happens when that happens is that the healthy animals live and breed and continue. So for somebody who is going into spirituality perhaps from the wrong point of view or with the wrong goals in mind, something that would be a lower level goal, or, you know, the seeking power or that sort of thing, then they are inviting in these darker energies, which can derail you from ascending to the heights that everybody's capable of. It all has to do with intent. So if your intent is less than pure in seeking growth, you're going to attract to you energies that are less than pure.
We've heard that a lot, and I actually believe that totally. It all comes down to intent completely.
Right.
With anything in life, yep. You know. What do you think, Sherry?
Well,
I agree. It's intent.
Well, Cherie has experienced some of the healing and the energy work that I've done. And you know, I tell people my only tool is divine love, and it works through focused loving intent. But when I work, it's an unusual day when a miracle doesn't happen around me. And a miracle is only something that science can't explain. It's not a big deal. Everybody can do miracles.
I would love to hear some examples of some miracles that you've seen or experienced.
Being able to diagnose and effect a healing on somebody that lives around the world that doesn't know I exist. Seeing somebody take a tumble off a bicycle and telling them exactly where and what kind of fracture they've got going on in their wrist, and offering to heal it, and they go to the doctor instead, and they come back later and say, well, the fracture was exactly where you said it was, and what it, you know, I'm able to perceive what's happening inside other people's bodies, and I'm able to shift reality in such a way that whatever was out of balance suddenly has never been out of balance. That's the best way I can describe it. The words don't exist in the English language to accurately convey what happens energetically, simply because there's not enough people talking about it yet. I had one lady, go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry, go ahead.
I had one lady that came to see me. I was up in Friday Harbor, Washington for a couple of weeks several years ago, and word got around in the community, and we got a phone call at the house I was staying at, and she asked for an appointment. And she showed up, and all I knew was there's a lady coming to see me at a certain time, and she walked in the door, and I pretty much knew what she wanted, but kind of pro forma, I said, you know, what can I do for you? And she says, I have been diagnosed with inoperable bilateral lung cancer, and I was told you could fix it. And I thought to myself, well, no pressure here. But about an hour earlier, I had been talking to somebody about how I trusted Spirit 1,000%, and I would do anything Spirit asked me to do without hesitation. So she comes and she sits down in the chair that I have for my clients. And she says, and Spirit says, take her cancer into your lungs. And I have to admit, there was just a split second of rebellion there. That was
that doesn't sound like a good idea.
Right. But one of my core beliefs is that all beings are one. So when I work with somebody, I rather than me sending my energy into their body to feel what's going on in their body, I allow their energy to be felt in mine. So I'm not invading their space, their energetic space. So I thought, you know, I've already died several times and been through the tunnel of light and come back, and you know, what's the worst that can happen? What's the best that can happen? Sure, bring it on. So, you know, I allowed that cancer to be in my body. And it felt like somebody had each lung in a grasping hand. And I just went within. I spent about 45 seconds working on the energetic levels. And I made sure I got every single cell. I didn't want any of those little buggers left behind. And when I felt that I'd gotten every cell, I returned my consciousness fully to this plane. And Spirit had me ask her to take a deep breath. And she took a deep breath and she started crying. She says, I have not been able to take a deep breath for months, and I haven't been able to cry since they first told me I had cancer. So she left, and about 3 days later, I got home from my travels, and there was a message on my phone. It was a Monday evening. She says, I just want you to know I just came from the doctor's office. He did x-rays of my lungs, and there's no trace of cancer. I would call that a miracle.
So what that's a good one. From learning that experience, how can our listeners benefit from that? It's just to trust and allow that if they have any type of disease or anything, if they can, you know, what can you suggest for our listeners if they're, you know, stricken with physical problems or emotional or mental or all three?
Well, one of my other core beliefs is that nothing ever happens to us. It only and always happens for us. And it doesn't matter what it is. It can seem terrible, but there's always benefit or it would not be happening. And we have two choices. We can perceive it from the point of view of a victim or the point of view of a student. And the only difference is frame of mind. A victim says, "Oh, why is this happening to me?" And a student says, "Oh, why is this happening to me?" But one is the negative and the other is the positive. Now, just a year and a half ago, I was diagnosed with advanced prostate cancer. And I never really got worried about it. I just, okay, let's get this sucker out of here. You know, I went and had surgery for it and all that. You don't get excited about things. You just understand that there's a lesson in here. This is a gift to you. It's not happening to you. It's a gift to you. And that point of view goes a long, long ways. You had said something, Sherry, about trust and believe or something like that. And I do want to share, this is one of my favorite teachings, that as I went through that first year with Spirit teaching me and me doing very odd things that, you know, that I never had believed in before, and watching them work and seeing people's lives changed, and Spirit started out with, you know, trust and believe. I kept saying, "Am I going crazy?" And Spirit would tell me, "Trust and believe, trust and believe." And as the year went on, they added three more words to this. They added allow and appropriate and love. And I had been sharing those five words for about 7 years. And I was in Seattle, and a young man came and sat in the booth across from me. And I offered the teaching to him about, you know, that this is your spiritual home. The foundation is trust and believe. It's trust yourself and believe in Spirit, and believe in yourself and trust Spirit. That's your foundation. Once you get that, then the next steps are allow and appropriate. And when I say allow, most of us try. Trying presupposes that we are in charge.
Right.
If we allow, we are accepting the fact that we are not in charge. And when I say the word allow in this context of this teaching, I see an image of myself holding this about 2-foot diameter soft pink nest made out of ostrich plumes. It's warm and clean and dry, and it's empty, but I know that something will be placed in it. I don't expect it, but I know that it will be. That's allowing. And then appropriate, once you learn to trust and believe and you allow, then along with the allowing comes the awareness that whatever is happening is appropriate within the mind, the eye, the heart, and Spirit, or it would not be happening. So those are the walls of your spiritual home. You have trust and believe as the foundation, and allow and appropriate are the walls. The roof is divine love, which is love not for or of, but simply love. And so you have the words trust, believe, allow, appropriate, and love. And as I was teaching this young man this teaching, Spirit says, give it to him as a mantra. And I'd never really thought about it that way, but it makes a sentence. Trust, believe, allow appropriate love.
I know for me, you know, I'm kind of one of these, you know, poor me sort of people too. And I imagine most people generally are. So I think that's a really hard behavior to try and change your mode of thinking. But it reminded me, I thought of something when you were talking about that, which was, I was in a career for a very long time and I wasn't happy with it. Well, I ended up getting hurt pretty severely on the job. And, you know, at the time it's like, oh, this is terrible. Life sucks. Why is this happening to me? But if it wasn't for that injury, I wouldn't be in the occupational field I am now. I was on workman's comp. I got some free schooling, you know, so a lot of those negative things I know from personal experience actually blossom into something that's quite positive. But at the time, you're down in the dumps about it.
Exactly, and that's so very, very common and so very, very human. And it's, you know, if you look back at your life at some of the worst things that happened, like you just did, and you can see where they did happen for you and they did help you. And so I always ask people, why wait 20 years to be able to see that they're happening for you and helping you? Why not see it right now? About 8 years ago, my only daughter, my light in my life, died in my arms. And she had been sick for quite some time, and my wife and I were both there with her and some friends. And she had made choices that she knew would wind up with her dying within a week. And we supported her in those choices, and so we held her. As a father, it almost killed me to have this beautiful young child, 30 years old, dying. And as a healer, there was absolutely nothing I could do about it. Spirit had told me, don't try to mess with this. This is exactly what she's chosen. But as a spiritual being, to watch my daughter transition to spirit was one of the most beautiful experiences I've ever had in my life. And so in that moment of my greatest sorrow, I was able to hold it together enough to understand that this too was happening for us, to us. And it was also my greatest joy.
Wow.
Have you, Sherry, ever had something like that where something bad happens and then it turns into something positive?
Well, yes. I think that now when I look back, now that I'm almost 60, I lost my, like I told, I think I mentioned this on air, and I also told you privately, Jason, that I lost my mother and my dad and my stepfather and my first husband when I was 35 or 36. And it's really painful because you're, you know, the core nuclear family that you ever knew, you know, here they are. You think that, you know, you're going to be 50, 60, 70 years old when you're going to lose your parents and this and that. But, you know, when they pretty much all of them die in a very sudden death, it kind of leaves you hanging. And being an only child, you know, I didn't really have anybody to lean on. I mean, except my, you know, my second husband. So, you know, it was very difficult. And I thought to myself, how many times, you know, why am I going through this? Why me? Why? What's going on? And I'd cry and, you know, feel sorry for myself, maybe go through the different stages of grieving or whatever you call it. But I finally woke up and I said, okay, what am I going to learn from this experience? What are the lessons? How can I take these things that I'm going through and help other people? What can I do? And I really, really, that's when my my skills have really kicked in. As far as my clairvoyant, my clairaudient, my clairsentient skills have kicked in, all, you know, just like boom, there they go, and it started working where I'm helping other people. So I think that's, you know, finding a diamond in the rough. I think that's what it is. What are the lessons? And, you know, I just started doing some, you know, inner work and started finding out, you know, instead of why me for a little while, but what's going to happen? What am I going to do? How am I going to make the best of what I have? What kind of lessons and things like that? So I think it forced me to go deeper than just taking my family for granted that they're going to be here forever. That's not the case. That's not the case at all.
That was you stepping up. That was your soul stepping up from who you had been to who you had always been.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I've been on this journey. I love it. And sometimes it's been painful. Sometimes it's disappointing. Sometimes, you know, I have attachments and, you know, I have to let my ego go and just let spirit guide. And when I'm doing that, it's great. But, you know, that's what we're here on earth is just to learn. And, you know, the less painful we're becoming overcoming these certain things that we're put here on earth to learn certain lessons. And, you know, I think that if we can add value, and just like Mani said, it's being able to go and just be of service, show kindness, show love, show compassion. And by doing that authentically, you're doing that for yourself.
I did have a question I thought about earlier. Now, you mentioned a near-death experience, and I find those really fascinating. Is that something you could share with the listeners about what your experience was? Because I find it very interesting. I mean, of course, there's going to be the scientists that say it's residual brain activity and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I personally believe that there's something after death. Whether what that is, I don't know. But I always find inspiration in hearing stories of people that have had those experiences.
Well, I've had several. I feel like I've died in this body five times. The first time I was about 22 years old. I was in a car wreck. I had my sternum broken in half. The top half bounced off my backbone. I Ooh. Put my head through the windshield, broke the steering wheel off the rim with my chin, and had out-of-body experiences. That was the beginning of my awakening. That was the beginning of my stepping up. It actually took me several years to fully acclimate to it, but it was definitely the giant first step. And in that experience, I'm going to, you'll probably hear my voice change, and I may sound a little distant because it even after all these years, I'm 73 in 2 months here, and that happened when I was 22, so that was 51 years ago. It still affects me profoundly. And so I was basically killed in a car wreck, and I was about four blocks from the VA hospital, and it was shift change time for the local police department. So they were on the scene almost immediately, and took me to the VA emergency room, and I was able to observe my body laying on the gurney as the doctors were hovering around me. But more importantly, immediately after the impact, I found myself standing in the proverbial tunnel of light, and the tunnel was as much brighter, well, it was the brightest thing I've ever seen, but at the far side of the tunnel was a portal, and the portal was as much brighter from the tunnel as the tunnel was from here. And there was only one place I wanted to be, and that was on the other side of that portal. And instantly the tunnel disappeared, and I was stepping into what I, after all these years, the only description I can give it is a garden beyond description. And myself, the atmosphere, the flowers, the butterflies, the soil, everything was made of pure light, and that light was pure love. And as soon as I stepped through, I became aware of many, many things. One thing was that when everything is made of light, which is love, there is no darkness, which is separation. And the corollary to that was that darkness in all of its forms only serves to give us the illusion of being separate from one another. So I spent what seemed to be 10 or 15 minutes just soaking it in, looking around and just bathing in this love and this light. And at the time that I died, I was an agnostic. I knew there was a God, but God had never really bothered to prove it to me in a way that I understood, so I wasn't too attached to it. And I looked up, and coming toward me through the garden was a robed male figure, and I knew instantly that this is the one that on earth we refer to as the Christ. And he came to me, and he embraced me. And when it was time to step back, I stepped back and looked, and he had a tear coming down his cheek. He says, "Welcome home, brother. You have a choice. You can stay here, or you can go back and help the children." And for me, there was no choice to make. This is who I am. This is what I do. I've done service to divinity, to creator, whatever word you want to use, for as many times as I've been on walking this earth, and that's been a lot. And we've stayed in touch. So I'm not Christian. I'm not religious. I'm anti-religion. Spirit says that religion is man's manipulation of man in the name of God, and spirituality is each soul's recognition of their oneness with that God. So that's where I'm at. I'm in the spirituality camp.
I think that's what I gravitate to as well. Is I want to be more spiritual. I just don't know how to go about doing it.
My go ahead.
You are a spiritual being, Jason.
I wish there was just some magical book I could buy and then suddenly read it and then be like a guru or something.
No.
Well,
it doesn't work that way.
There's a book, but it's not physical. Do you mind if I give you a real brief on-air reading?
No, go for it. I'd love it.
Okay. My sense, Jason, is that you have had to struggle very, very hard to get to where you are in life and within yourself, and you are scared to death in some ways of turning loose of any of that appearance of control that you fought so hard to achieve. And this is very, very common, and I went through it, and I know an awful lot of people that have too. And this, again, brings you back around to trust and believe. Several years ago, quite a few years ago, I knew a young man who was a very accomplished athlete and mountain climber and so forth. He decided he was going to climb one of our local mountains here without anybody with him. And as he was climbing, a boulder about the size of a school bus shifted and pinned his hand to another boulder through the back of the hand. And it was freezing, and he was out there by himself. They did find him. It took him about 6 hours to move the rocks enough to get him free and save his hand. And I hadn't seen him at this time for probably about 10 or 15 years, and I went to visit him in the hospital because I saw his name in the paper. And the last time I had seen him, I had not yet had my spiritual awakening, so he knew me as a completely different person. I walked in, I did a healing on his hand, he recovered instant full use of his hand. That got his attention. That's what the healing work is for, is to get people's attention. So they think, well, maybe there's more to this than I thought. So I shared with him some of Spirit's teachings, and he was kind of leaning towards that. And then he decided he was going to go off on his old ways again. And he got himself in a little bit of trouble, and he contacted me, and Spirit had me make him a sign to put up on his wall because he's a very visual person. His name was Jeff. And little tiny letters, it says Jeff. And little bigger letters, it says Jeff. And then in real big letters, it says, oh, Jeff, please let go of the reins. You're making it very hard to steer. So I would suggest that perhaps that would apply to you.
That is actually, I would say I'm a visual as well, and I could definitely print something like that. It's a good reminder, you know, whatever you print up, before you leave, it really kind of opens your thought processes to recognize that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to find any fault with you. People call me for readings and so forth. They understand that I don't do frou-frou. I try to help. And to me, the best way to help is to very gently speak the truth. And so I can only speak the truth as I perceive it, and it may or may not be received that way, but it seems to work for a lot of people.
Now, I think my biggest thing is I want to believe in something, but I'm in a perpetual state of confusion because I don't know what to believe. Because you take religion, for example, everybody thinks they have the right religion, you know, and in the world of the paranormal, everybody thinks this or that, and there's fakery, and it's like, it just mucks up the whole thing to where I don't know what to believe. You know, I don't know what's real. You know, is everything in my mind, my brain, am I creating it? Is my imagination, or is there something spiritual going on? You know, it's just being in a state of constant confusion.
Okay. Perception creates reality. That which you think or feel is truth in this moment is truth to you until something changes your mind.
And I totally believe that our perception and thoughts are things, and we manifest our own reality. I'm totally, totally behind that.
Well, one of my other little lessons that I offer people sometimes about good and bad, say you and I make a bet that we're going to take a deck of cards. There's a deck of cards and a poison pill and a gold bar on a little table, and we're going to cut the cards, you and I, and whoever has the highest card gets the gold bar, and whoever gets the lowest card has to take the poison pill. So you cut the cards first, and you draw a four. That's not good when you're looking for
no,
the highest
it's not.
Card. And I cut the cards, and I pull a three. So what seemed to be a bad thing to you suddenly becomes a good thing to you. What is now a good thing to you could seem like a bad thing to me if I was an ordinary person. It's the same event. The only difference is what filters you look through to perceive the event. So good and bad exists only in our minds.
I totally agree with that. It's all perception.
Good.
Society forms it, though. That's the problem, is we're constantly bombarded with the media or the way we grew up in school or what our parents taught us, and it's breaking down those barriers to open up the mind enough to, you know, improve our perception or change our perception.
I totally agree with that. So why aren't you doing that?
I don't know. That's a good question, because I'm consciously aware that that's the issue.
why are you allowing yourself to be held by beliefs that you know to be false?
That's a good question.
Okay. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give it some more thought, because, I mean, that's a good thing to point out, is that I know what the issues are. I know why I am the way I am. And I know there's more out there than what I've been taught or what surrounds me. And I know that perception is everything. I already knew that, and I knew that we create our own reality, but yet I'm still haven't taken it any farther. I'm still.
The trick is to live what you say you believe. Can I share one more story from my personal experience?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. My father was an icon in my life. He was a very, very upstanding man. He was not religious. He was spiritual, not in the same way I am, but within the framework of the 1950s, he was very spiritual. And he had a major heart attack, and it appeared that he was going to be dying very, very soon. And I began weeping, and Spirit let me blubber for a few minutes, and then came along and just metaphorically tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, what you doing? And my response was, "I'm grieving, damn it. My father's dying. Leave me alone. I'm grieving." And Spirit says, "Oh, and what is it you teach about death and dying?" "Well, it's release from the material, and it's, you know, you get to go back home, and all these good things." And Spirit, it's the harshest tone I'd ever heard from Spirit at that time. They said, "Either live what you teach or stop teaching it."
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry, would you please repeat it?
"Either live what you teach or stop teaching it." It made a very big impact.
Well, we just noticed the time here. We have a few minutes left, and I wanted to make sure to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can learn more about you, or if you have any publications that you recommend or stuff like that.
Well, I have written a book called A Book of Answers, which doesn't have any answers in it, but it shows you where you've hidden your own answers. And I'm actually publishing that a bit at a time daily on my Facebook page. If you do a search for Mani Pureheart, M-A-N-I, and Pureheart, just like it sounds, it will bring up a white-haired, bearded man in a white hat, but it'll say Robert Ward, which is not my name, but that's what Facebook forces me to use. But every day I will be posting a excerpt from my Book of Answers on there. And there's also my website is IIIV4C4U.com. It's I4C4U.com, and you can email me and contact me through there if you'd like.
We still got a few minutes left, and I did. Now, getting back to, there's one more question I had, which was we were talking about the near-death experience, and I spend a lot of time on YouTube, and it's kind of one of the things that I've looked up before, people's stories, because I find it fascinating. But you always hear these ones where people don't go to heaven. You hear them, they go to hell, and they're tormented by demons. Do you think, in your experience or your knowledge, do you think that that's kind of a real thing? To where somebody dies and experiences that separation or an evil place or hell, however you want to call it? Is that a thing too?
I think that perception creates reality, and if that's what they feel they've experienced, then that's what they've experienced. I happen to live at a much higher vibration rate than that, and I don't think it's even remotely a possibility for me to experience, so I really can't speak to it. From an experiential or honest point of view.
And that's what I've always thought was people create that reality when they die. What do you think, Sherry?
I believe in that to a certain degree. I was going to ask Mani about this. Is that as an example, if you don't believe in the bad stuff, let's say you don't believe in hell, you don't believe in parasites or demons or anything like that, they don't exist in your world, correct?
Correct.
It's just what you allow yourself.
Right. And those who are brought up in a culture that promotes hellfire and damnation and you're going to go to hell and you're going to burn forever and you're going to be tormented, that's pre-programmed into their belief system. And you know, for instance, being white Anglo-Saxon Protestant type folk, you know, upbringing and that sort of thing, when we die, we expect to see certain things, you know, some people might see streets of gold and the heavenly gates and all this. But if we were from Burma or from Bali, we would expect to die and see, you know, long-fanged demons. Perception creates reality, and I think that the way we are taught to believe while we are alive colors our initial death experience. You know, our initial death experience, the one that we go to and then come back here and talk about, is like going to the waiting room of the afterlife, and it's going to be colored by what we expect.
I always believe, like I said earlier, I think people create their own hell, and that's what my heart tells me, whether that's spirit or not. That's just kind of what I believe. I've always thought that.
Well, for me, it's you know, just keeping my energy, my vibration as high, and just don't, you know, try and keep your thoughts and your associations to a positive level.
Yep.
And that's what I try
agree.
And do. The world needs more positive people. It seems like, you know, you turn on the news and it's all, you know, all these wars and shootings, and I think I have hopeful one day that the global consciousness will raise a bit higher, where people get beyond ego and money and competition. That's what I would like to see happen.
Well, I've been working towards it for many, many lifetimes.
It's a process, isn't it? It's the journey part.
Well, you know, the Buddhist's belief system is that as each one of us increases our vibration rate and takes care of those around us, that the entire civilization increases its vibration rate. And I think that's the key. We have to get back to the point where we care about each other, not just, you know, thoughts and prayers to all you people with the dead kids. You know, let's do something. Let's love one another. Let's support one another. Let's be conscious of each other's pains and joys, and you know, we're all one. We should live like that.
Absolutely.
I agree. Wow, that's awesome. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, of course it is.
Well,
yep, no attachment and unconditional love. That's what you share.
Yep. Well, absolutely. You know, one of the things the Spirit taught me that is another one of my cornerstones: be love. All else is commentary.
Be love. I personally am always trying and striving on a daily basis to be more positive. It's a challenge, you know, in this world we live in. But I'm looking at the clock here, and we are just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your experiences and your knowledge. I know you've got me thinking a little bit deeper from having you on this show, so I appreciate that. And hopefully we can get you back on in the future, because it sounds like we have a lot more we could talk about.
I suspect we do. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Manny, for coming on our show. We appreciate you.
Absolutely. I'm delighted to be able to share what I have.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful. That's excellent. Thank you. Okay. Jason, we're going to get right in. Next week, you know, I'm going to go and stick into Portland, Oregon area. We're going to go and introduce for the very first time a paranormal team. It's an abbreviation. It's POPS. It's Portland, Oregon Paranormal Society. Chris Lively is the founder. He's been around, I think, for, I'm not sure, at least 10 years, 10 to 12 years. Really nice guy.
Cool.
Really like him. Does a lot of investigation, especially with families. I think that's his specialty, when there are children involved in families. So we're going to have Chris for the very first time next week. He's going to introduce his paranormal team, as far as what he does, what his specialty, how, you know, all that other things. We haven't talked about the paranormal for a while, so that's going to be really different. And the next following week, we're going to go into the state of consciousness. This gal named Nicole Perman, she's going to talk about how you can make different tinctures to help raise your vibration trauma, cutting trauma and things like that. So it's going to be quite interesting to learn and hear about. But, we've got some really some big names coming back. Andrea Perone just called me a few days ago. She's coming back, Cliff Barofin. So we're going to have some valuable people coming in. Even the people that we have are quite valuable, like Manny and our past guests. So we value each and every one of them and appreciate them. So until then, what are you going to say? Hey.
Yeah, that sounds great. And you do such a great job finding guests, by the way. You're amazing, Sherry.
Well, thank you. And you're amazing in taking care of the technical. Like I said, we're a match made in heaven, Jason. I couldn't do what
Absolutely.
You do. And I love what I do, and I just love connecting to the beautiful souls that we do, past, present, and future, each and every one of them. One's not any better than the other. We can all learn for each and every one of them, and we can just grow and grow together. So, yay.
Yay, yay. And Paranormal Horizons, I believe this was episode 190. That's a lot.
Wow.
That's 190 weeks the show has been on.
That's great.
Well, actually, it'd be more than that because there have been some weeks with technical problems. So we're probably at about 200 episodes. So,
wow.
But with that, we're out of time. So I want to thank everybody for listening.
Well, next week, Jason, we've got Paranormal. So, yeah, thank you, everybody, for listening. And, you know, it's wonderful. Thank you. And, you know, if you have any questions or suggestions, we're open. Just shoot us a quick message on Facebook, and we'd be happy to see what we can do to make sure that, you know, the requests are fulfilled as much as possible.
Absolutely. So we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time. Give us a like on Facebook, at Paranormal Horizon on Facebook. And with that, we'll bid everybody adieu, and we'll see everybody next week. Good night, everyone.
Take care. Bye, everybody. Love you guys. Peace.